This is Purushottam Classes 2010, Chapter 14, Brahmastuti. This is verse 34.
Tadburi bhagyam iha janma kimapyatavyam yad gokule pi katamangri rajo bhikshekam yajivitam tu nikalam bhagavan mukundas
Brahma is praying to the Lord, and he's saying, my greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth whatever in this forest of Gokul and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. The entire life and soul of the Brijvasis in Gokul, the Gokulavasis, is Krishna Mukunda, and the dust of whose feet is being searched for even today in the Vedic mantras. In our outline of the 18 points Rama is revealing in his 40 prayers, this is the beginning verse 31, and this is 34. In verse 31, he starts to glorify the unlimited fortune of the Brijvasis, associates of Purushottam Sri Krishna in Vrindavan. So, of course, we mentioned this before. But the key point I thought here in the Sanskrit, in lieu of some of the recent events, he's saying, Gokule katamangri rajo bhishekam. Raj means dust. The dust of Braj and the dust of the feet of devotees. Abhishek, we all know this. Krishna's Abhishek, bathing. And Janmasthami, we perform a Panchamrit Abhishek. So this is a Raja Abhishek. He must be bathed not with Panchamrit, because great personalities like Lord Brahma, when they go somewhere, they're invited, they're often offered Panchagavya, or they're bathed, their feet are bathed with panchamrita, yogurt and milk and ghee and honey and sugar water and cow dung and cow urine and panchagavya. All auspicious things are offered to them, all basically liquids and different flavors and yogurt and honey, etc. But he's saying there, Angri Raj Abhishekam. I don't want those kind of baths that I get when I visit great kings' assemblies or visit other demigods. They honor me with the honorable Avaritta bath or the Panchamrit Abhishek of my feet or the Panchagavya Abhishek. What do I really want? What am I hoping for? I want to bathe in the dust. I want a dust bath from the dust to the feet of the Brijvasis, which is full of goduli. They're walking barefoot. At least Krishna's walking barefoot everywhere in Vrindavan behind the cows, so naturally his feet are full of cow dung and powdered cow dung and flower pollen and the dust of Vrindavan. It's there in his feet, and it's on the feet of all the Brijvasis. And this, rather, not a liquid, rasa, tasty, soothing, satisfying bath of Panchamrit. I mean, it's certainly pleasurable if someone pours milk over your feet or yogurt or honey or sugar water, or even if you bathe in such substances, or cow urine, maybe that's a little questionable, or water, cow dung water. These are all rasas. These are all different rasams, nectars and amrits in their own regard. Milk itself is described in Ayurveda as an amrit. And milk is one of the components of Panchamrit. Panchamrit. So milk is amrit, ghee is amrit, honey is amrit, yogurt is amrit. I'm not sure about yogurt, but many of these are amrit. Panchamrit, five nectar showers, five nectar substances, five amrit rasas. Soothing, satisfying, flavorful, tasty. Everyone knows how tasty Krishna's Panchamrita is, especially if you're in Mayapur or Vrindavan, and they offer fruit juices and coconut water and jeweled water and Navaratna water. That combination of the transcendental fragrances and aromas and unguents washing from the transcendental form of the Lord, combined with all these auspicious and wonderful juices and nectars of this material world, when they all become transformed into the nectar of Krishna's Charanamrita, Abhishek, Amrit, everyone relishes with great happiness and joy. It's enjoined nectar devotion, we should take 3 drops. We should honor 3 drops of the Charanamrita of the Lord or the Abhishek bath water of the Lord. But generally in ISKCON we have a little more enthusiastic approach to the to the Abhishek, Janmashtami and Radhashtami and Nishringa Chaturdasi and Gaur Purnima Nityananda Trayodasi. Rather than coming with an open hand and surrendered heart and surrendered mind, hoping and begging to get 3 drops of that mercy, 3 drops of that nectar, generally devotees beat down the door of the deity room. Brahma here, 5,000 years ago, he's happy to get a little dust. He says, I want Angri Raj, Braja Raj, Angri Raj, Abhishek. I want an Abhishek, not a Panchamrit, not a Panchagavya, but of the dust from the feet of Brijvasis, which is Braja Raj. But if it's coming from the feet of a Brijvasi, it's surcharged with their kripa, Bhakta Paraduli. And this is what Krishna Kaviraj states in Chaitanya Charitamrita about 3 most powerful substances that are all available from the Vaishnava. Bhakta Paraduli, Bhakta Parajal, Bhakta Bhukta Avashesha, in Mahabal. He says these have inestimable achintya shakti, strength and power. Mahabal, the power to give what? To give mukti, to give vibhuti or aishwarya or kamani kanak pratishta? No. These 3 have the power to give prem. Krishna, Braja Prem for Krishna and Braj. The water that's used that bathes the feet of the devotees. The Duli, Paraduli, it says Angri, Angri Raj, Angri Raj. Angri is another way of saying Para. Angri means lotus, means feet. Raja means Duli, Duli means dust or earth. Knowing this, being a Mahajan, Swayamvur, Narada, Shambhu, Pralada, Janaka, Bhishma, Brahma knows that this is the essence. I'm not asking for, because it's interesting. He's saying, I want birth in Vrindavan, any birth. And then he's not saying, so if I'm born in Vrindavan, then so much Braja Raj will fly over me. So much dust will just fly here and there. As we know, living in Vrindavan, anyone who lives here, they know if you sweep your room at 9 o'clock, at 9:15 there's dust all over the floor. Even if you wash it and try your best to keep it somewhat clean, as we're all raised in the West to fairly clean standards of deity worship and temple maintenance. But it's a hopeless, hopeless endeavor here, because you sweep the floor very carefully, then you get a cloth and some eucalyptus oil and mix it with some water and clean the floor. Maybe for 1 minute it's dust free. Then dust comes, I don't know where, somewhere, from everywhere. Braja Raj has a special quality of being self-generating. It's unlimitedly expanding at every moment. It never ceases to end. So you kind of live with it, you breathe it, you live with it, you worship it, you honor it, and by the mercy of this dust we can get Krishna Prema. So he's not saying, I want to take birth anywhere as a plant or a creeper, any type of birth in Vrindavan, Krishna, I don't mind, because then I'll get the Braja Raj. He says, no, I don't want Braja Raj, I want Angri Raj. Gokul Katama. Gokul, he says, Gokul Api Katama. Katama, this word apparently, it means any of the devotees of Gokul Bhakta. Gokul Bhakta Angri Raj Abhishekam. Any Bhakta from Gokul, whether it's Bhakta Trina, Bhakta Grass, Bhakta Pear, Bhakta Tree, Bhakta Briksha, it is Bhakta Briksha, Bhakta Briksha, Bhakta Tree, Bhakta Galeri, Bhakta Squirrel, Bhakta Gaya, Bhakta Cow. Any Bhakta, if I can get the dust from there, feet, then I know that I'll get that Krishna prema just by that. What to speak of their words and their blessings and their heartfelt blessings, or their lochan kripa, their darshan, or their sparsha. I simply want the dust that somehow contacted their bodies and become enriched with all their kripa and all their mercy. Well, some devotees in the audience, they've just completed their dandavat prakrama of Govardhan. Giriraj Govardhan Aki during Purushottam Vrat, so they've really collected a lot of dust. A lot of dust from the Vrijvasis and all the other residents. So he's saying their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of God at Mukunda. Well, basically, Brahma is praying in such a high position on Satyaloka, Loka, the Creator. The whole universe as secondary creator after Vishnu. And he's praying basically just to be a speck of dust. He wants to take a birth here so he can get dust. So his objective is, Brahma's objective in Sankalpa is not to take birth in Vrindavan. Oh, I want to take birth in Vrindavan. He wants to take birth in Vrindavan because that's a facility, that's an opportunity to get something special in Vrindavan, the dust of the feet of Vrijvasis. So really he's saying, I want to take birth as a dust particle at the feet of the devotees. And that's our prayer to Lord Chaitanya. Ayi nanda tana chikinkaram patitam vama shameva vamado. He says, oh, Nanda Nandan, you are a Gokulvasi. Definitely. Nanda Nandan is a Gokulvasi. He's a Gokul Api Katama. He's any one of those residents, or the resident, the son of Nanda Nandan. Nanda Gokul. It's called Nanda Gokul, Nanda Gopa. Nanda Gopa Sutta. He's the son of Nanda Gopa. And his dust is also here. So he's praying that, and then Lord Chaitanya is praying, oh, Nanda Nandan, keep me fixed as a particle of dust on your feet. And he's saying similar, Brahma's saying, if it's my greatest possible, in other words, this is my buddhi bhagyam, my unimaginable hope against hope attainment. If I could somehow or other, I don't know how or when or why or if it's possible, but any whatsoever, kimapi, whatsoever here and any birth, I could be born in Vrindavan, that would be my greatest fortune. And BBT's purport, Brahma desires to take birth even as the smallest blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the holy residents of Vrindavan may walk upon his head and bless him with the dust of their feet. Well, I guess that desire became fulfilled because he became the four mountain peaks of Barsana. He became, as I said, he became a big particle of dust, he became a mountain. Mountain is a lot of dust particles, and so he got to take the ideal birth because grass is not everywhere, maybe here and there, not in a main place, maybe off the footpath, because usually where people walk, grass doesn't grow. If you ever walk in the forest somewhere, there's a footpath which is all mud or packed down earth, and just on either side there's grass and weeds growing, but when people walk back and forth and dogs and animals, then the grass doesn't usually grow there. You see in the inside path of Govardhan. He wants they'll walk on him. He does not aspire, being realistic, Brahma does not aspire to directly achieve the dust of the Lord's feet. He aspires for the mercy of the Lord's devotees. Chakravartipad says that Brahma is willing to take birth even as a stone in a paved footpath in the Lord's abode. Since Brahma is the creator of the entire universe, we can just imagine the glorious position of the residents of Vrindavan. What do the Vrindavan residents know? They know the animals, they know the seasons, they know the clouds, they know the plants, they know the terrain, they know the forest, footpaths and gullies. They know their way around, they know how to walk from Vrindavan to Kamyavan and Yavatgram to Kokilavan, and they know how to navigate through the geography of Vrindavan. And they know about the Prem Gully and Mangali and Dangali and the different gullies here and there. But do they have that much knowledge they can build a universe and build millions of planets? They only have one head, they don't have two. And they're always associating with cows and animals. So they're simple village people. But yet there's so much glorious position that the topmost person in the universe wants to become a coward, wants to have some connection with this coward village of Braj. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki. The Lord's devotees achieve their exalted position by unalloyed devotion and love. One cannot achieve such spiritual opulence by any puffed up material process of personal improvement. In a Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada reveals Brahma's mind. Quote, Brahma's thinking, if I am not so fortunate to take birth in Vrindavan, I beg that I can take birth just outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out of Vrindavan, they will walk over me. Of course, that's pretty rare. Even that would be a great fortune to me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. Now, this is an interesting idea. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. The devotees are so exalted, Brijbasis, worshippers of Radha and Krishna, and Brajabhav, Ragatmika Bhakti, and the follower, their followers, the Raghunuga Bhaktas. They're so much honored and respected and desired by Brahma. And yet we take it very casually and very lackadaisical way. We offend advanced devotees on the path of Rag Marg, or worshippers of Radha and Krishna and Brajabhav. We speak with familiar words about them, or even casual way, or oftentimes offensive way. And these same Brijvasis are so much to be honored and worshipped. And then Sartadarshini Vishnu Chakravarti, he said, Brahma Singh, I've given up my control of the universe. I don't care about this universe and controlling anymore. And I'm not questing after a future liberation. Only I'm thinking and aspiring and praying for is how somehow or other I can get the dust of the feet of the Brijvasis. This is his statement. And Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, he's rephrasing Brahma, he's translating like this, I will consider myself fortunate to be given a chance to take birth in this land of Vrindavan in any of my future lives. My dear Lord Purushottam Sri Krishna, I am therefore not interested in material opulences or liberation. I am humbly praying at your lotus feet. That's getting a little thing there. For you to please give me any sort of birth within Vrindavan forest so that I may be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. So if one takes birth in the Vrindavan forest in Vrindavan, then he may get this favor which Brahma is praying for in the Brahma Stuti, that the dust of the feet of those devotees will go on his head. Taking birth in Vrindavan means that you live there. Once you've taken birth there, then you live there. So you can take birth, you can live in Vrindavan by virtue of taking birth here. That's one way to live in Vrindavan. Another way to live in Vrindavan is to take birth somewhere else and to move here. To visit, to stay for a short time, or stay for many, many years. And whether you're born here in Vrindavan, as Brahma is aspiring for, or whether you move and live here, the aspiration should be the same as Brahma. He wants to be born here so he can live here, and when he lives here he can receive that exalted fortune of the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas. So taking an indication from Brahma and his stuti for our own bhajan, we understand, okay, I wasn't born here, but I'm living here. Do I have the same regard for the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas, the brahmanas and the gwals and gopis and gwals and everyone, all the various brijvasis that live here? Do I have this regard and this respect and this care and this consideration and this hankering to receive some of the dust of their holy feet on our head? Because they're devotees. Many of the people live in Vrindavan. Of course, not all. Many have come here to work or do service, and they don't have the bhava of brijvasis, or the, even if they're born here. But many do. Many are deeply attached to Radha and Krishna. So this is an ideal place to collect the mercy, as they say. Prabhupada gives his tika here on this verse 34 from Brahma Stuti, and you'll see that because they're, Brahma is addressing Krishna as Mukunda, he said, the entire life and soul of the Vrijvasis is Mukunda. The dust of his feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. So they use the word Mukunda. We'll probably discuss, starts to discuss that. And his purport to this verse 34, even if I am given the chance to grow just as the humble grass in this land, that will be a glorious birth for me. Trina Janam. Let me be born as a blade of grass. That would be a most glorious. Generally we think, oh, I want to be born in Vrindavan, I want to be a house servant of Krishna or a Mandri or a Sakhi. Of course, that's our fortune by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, that he's enabling us to attain the fortune of becoming a Mandri or a Sakhi, which means it must be our inherent potential. Even if I am given a chance, that would be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest in Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan. So that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. The Prabhupada goes on with this phrasing of Brahma's prayer. Brahma is saying, I can see that everyone here is simply full of Krishna consciousness. They do not know anything but the lotus feet of Krishna, for which the Vedas themselves are searching. The Prabhupada's purport. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that the purpose of Vedic knowledge is to find Krishna. It is said in Brahma Samhita that it is very difficult to find Krishna. Durlabham, very Durlabham, the Supreme Personality of God. It is very difficult to find Krishna, even if one performs systematic reading of the Vedic literature. But Krishna is very easily available by the mercy of a pure devotee. The pure devotees of Vrindavan are fortunate because they can see Mukunda all the time. This word Brahma uses to address Krishna, verse 34, the word Mukunda, has two meanings. Muk means liberation. Krishna, mukti pradayate, mukti da. Krishna can give liberation and therefore transcendental bliss. The word muk also refers to his smiling face, which is just like the kunda flower. Mukha means face. The kunda flower is very beautiful and the flower appears to be smiling. Thus the comparison is made. Krishna's smiling face is like the smiling, happy flower known as Kunda. And that Kunda flower, Krishna's face, if it smiles upon you, if he smiles upon you, or if he Kas is Krishna Kripa Kataksha, if Mukunda casts a sidelong glance from his lotus eyes of his Kunda flower face, then simply by a glance one will attain mukti. So that face, which is beautiful to look at, which emanates flower-like smiles, and that face which can bestow the benediction of liberation upon all who receive that Sudarshan. Anyone who receives that all-auspicious glance, Sudarshan, they can get mukti. So therefore he's Mukunda. The difference between the pure devotees of Vrindavan and other devotees is that the residents of Vrindavan have no other desire but to associate with Krishna. Krishna, being very kind to his devotees, fulfills their desire because they always want Krishna's association. And the Lord is always prepared to give his association to the Vrijvasis. The devotees in Vrindavan are also spontaneous lovers, ragatmika janas. They do not follow the regulative principles. They are not required to strictly follow regulative principles because they are already naturally developed in transcendental love for Krishna. As the old adage goes, in love there are no rules. In rules there is no love. So they are in Krishna Prem. There's no more yamas and niyamas for them, although they follow. Regulative principles are required for persons who have not achieved the position of transcendental love. In rules, there's no love. If there's no love, follow the rules. If there's love, the rules automatically bend and stretch according to the need. Brahma is also a devotee of the Lord, but he is subject to follow the regulative principles. He's a Vaidhi Bhakta. He prays to Krishna to give him the chance. Just give me a chance to take birth in Vrindavan so that he might be elevated to the platform of spontaneous love. But somehow, what's being said here in Prabhupada's purport, he's saying that Vaidhi Bhakti, if it mixes with some mercy of Vrindavan or mercy of Vrijvasis, then it can become Rag Bhakti, Raganuga Bhakti. But without that, one is stuck. So Brahma is realizing that, so he's praying for that also. I'll do text 35. Brahma Stuti, text 35. Esham gosha nivasina muta bhavan kim deva ratteti nash cheto vishwa falat falam twaraparam kutrapya yanmuyati sadvesha diva putana pisakula tameva deva pita yadamata sarit priyat matanaya pranashayas twat krite. Brahma continues praying to Purushottam Sri Krishna. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what other reward, of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. Gosha Nivas. Gosh, the pasturing grounds. Nivas, Gosha Nivasis. It's very interesting way to describe Vrijvasis, Goshnivasis. Gosh means of pasturing grounds. Those valleys and fields which are full of Gosh. Gosh means sounds. The bellowing of cows calling for the calves and the bellowing of calves crying for their mothers. Ah, ah. And the deep bellowing of bulls in rut. Ah, ah. Big bulls, and then the sound of panpipes and flutes and buffalo horns. It's quite a musical valley, a valley of music, a field of music. And that's Gosh, Gosh Nivas. Every step is a dance. Every word is like nectarian song. And the flute song pervades everything and everywhere and every movement. Krishna's flute sound, the flute song of Krishna's integrating everything.
I can't think, my mind, when I just think of what reward you'll give to these Brijvasis, I don't know. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left? If you made Putana that Rakshasi who came to poison you and kill you, if you made her a beneficiary of your divine causeless mercy and elevated her to the spiritual world to become your nursemaid, Datri, and you blessed her that her brothers, Bakasura and Agasura, would also be liberated personally by you. Now, and she simply disguised herself as a devotee and entered Braj as a disguised, fake Brijvasi devotee. So it's a good thing this Putana Leela is going on, because that means there's room for false and disguised devotees like ourselves that are parading around Vrindavan with all kinds of poison on our lips. We don't have poison on our breasts, or maybe, but we have poison in our minds and poison on our lips, and we're always biting the devotees' ears with our poison words and offensive statements. But somehow we're disguised as a devotee with Kanti Mala and Dhoti Kurta. And we're moving around Vrindavan, annihilating Vaishnavas and trying to kill Krishna with our offensive statements. Poison-like words. So we have poison lips instead of poison breasts. But somehow she got such fortune, even though she's disguised as a devotee. Yeah, sat veshat. Vesh means clothing. Sat veshat. She was sat veshat. She was wearing the vesh of a sat, of a sadhu, of a saintly person, but she was a rakshasi, came to kill Krishna. It says sat veshat, sat. Sadveshat eva putanapi sakula tvam e devapita. So sakula means with her family, her kul. She was given such a great fortune. So what will you give to the Brijvasis whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and their very lives and hearts are all dedicated to you? The priyatma, Tanaya, Pranaya, Ashaya. Ashaya, their minds, their prana, their children, everything is tvatkrite. Everything is done to you, given to you. So what are you going to give them? What's left? The sannyasis will object that the inhabitants of Braja, who are all householders, have fallen into a network of material life. Brijvasis are simply grihastas. They're bound by attachment to wife and children and a host of other things. Brahma replies to Krishna's protest. Yes, my lord, that is true for most materialistic grihastas, because the word is there in the verse griham. However, what to speak of householders in Braj, even your ordinary devotees in other places like Auckland and Brisbane, they are superior to these sannyasi critics. Attachment, hatred, and other material emotions are great thieves because they steal the great treasure of pure bliss from the soul. The rebellious souls are bound by their karma, placed in the prison cell of household life and tied with foot shackles to a host of illusions, so that they cannot criticize the Supreme Lord after having lost their wealth. O Krishna, as long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position as prisoners of illusion. However, when they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti, and then they repose all their love in you. In this way, the thieves of material attraction, hatred, and love become sanctified by becoming fixed in you, and then help the devotee by giving him transcendental bliss, knowledge, and a host of advantages.
In that way, the same home, which was formerly a prison cell created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions, becomes for your devotee a place filled with service to you, Prabhu Datta Desh. They serve you by hearing and chanting about your glories and a host of other activities all performed for your pleasure. These activities that the devotees perform while living in their homes as Grihastha Vaishnavas, they carry them to your eternal spiritual abode. Thus, when a devotee awakens his affection for you, this bewilderment, moha, from objects such as wife and sons becomes a cause for expressing his anubhavas, or his prema for you. How can householders like this be compared to ordinary sannyasis? My son Sanat Kumara criticizes the non-devotee sannyasis and praises the superiority of the devotee householders in Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this purport, Vishwanath is giving a plug for the Grihastha Vaishnavas, that they are more than even ordinary sannyasis. In the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 22, verse 40, Vishwanath Chakravartipat quotes the teaching of Chatush Kumara, Sanat Kumara, the eldest of them, sons of Brahma. Krishcho Mahaniha Vavarnanam Aplavesham Shadvarga Nakram Asukena Titirshanti. The ocean of nescience and ignorance is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Bhavarnavam aplavesham. The lotus feet of the Lord will carry one across the Bhavasagar. Although the ocean of material existence is very difficult to cross, simply by taking shelter of the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers. And now, Brahma goes on. The residents of Braj have thousands of times more love for you than householders who live in other places. Though you are the Purna Brahma, you show yourself as dependent upon these Premika Bhaktas by taking the form of their son, friend, or lover to become their submissive servant. So that's a very beautiful and intimate illumination spoken through the mouth of Brahma by Vishnu Chakravarti, elaborating on what he spoke in this verse. 36 in Krishna Book Prabhupada says, Brahma said like this, "My dear Purushottam Sri Krishna, I can also understand that your appearance as a small coward boy, a child of the coward men, is not at all a material activity. You are so much obliged by the affection of your Brijbasi devotees that you are here in Vrindavan to inspire them with more loving service by your transcendental presence. In Vrindavan there is no distinction between material and spiritual because everything is dedicated to your loving service. My dear Lord Sri Krishna, your Vrindavan Leela are simply to inspire your devotees. If someone takes your Vrindavan pastimes to be material, they will be misled." So now we're hearing wonderful glorification of Vrindavan and Brijbasis being compared to other. Mostly we see that all of Krishna's devotees, he had all his friends in Vrindavan, they had all his coward boyfriends in Sakiras, they were all children, which means they have mothers and fathers. It means that all his friends were that were byproducts of grihasthas. So Vrindavan is full of grihasthas. And we see in Gaur Lila, Lord Chaitanya, all of his associates are Brahmins. And they're all sons, they're all Kaishora Brahmins, and they're all sons of Brahmin grihasthas, Vaishnav Brahmins, Vaishnav grihasthas. And they all grew up and got married. He got married to Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya, and they all got married, mostly. So for the most part, the majority of devotees are Krishna or Gauranga, or Ram for that matter, all grihasthas. And so people sometimes think, oh, grihasthas are in Maya. You're attached to your wife and house and children. And one may be. But the keynote here is that to live there with wife and husband and children and house and all accoutrements, but your attachment is Krishna Sakti. Attachments for Krishna. Dedication to Krishna. The center is Krishna. We're all together. All these paraphernalia and relatives and friends and children and parents are all combined together for one goal and one purpose, to please and satisfy Krishna. And this is Vrindavan. Rishvasis, they're doing so many things that grihasthas do, but the center of everything is Krishna and his happiness, his pleasure, all their words, all their thoughts, all their activities. Although they're interacting and eating together and sleeping together and moving here and there and laughing and exchanging, but the center thread that holds all the individual pearls of that necklace of Vrindavan with all its Brijvasis together, that central thread is Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's happiness, and Krishna's love. It's a binding thread. Text 37. Prapancham nishprapanchopi vidamba yasi bhutale prapana janatananda sandoham Pratitam Prabhu Janata Ananda Sandoham. Ananda Sandoham, a great variety of different kinds of ecstasies. Pratitum, in order to spread. My dear Master Sri Krishna, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you descend to this earth and appear to imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment. Ananda Sandoham. You descend here to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Krishna comes here to increase the bliss of his devotees. Usually if we go somewhere or do something, we go somewhere or do something to increase our own bliss. At the expense of objects, or the expense of places, or the expense of other people, or a combination of all three. We engage them. We go to a restaurant to eat, and we engage the restaurant and the cooks and the waitresses and everybody. The place, the objects, the food, the place, and the people. We engage them all in pleasing us, serving us, cooking for us, entertaining us. We don't go there to serve them. We don't go there to entertain and please them and make them ecstatic. But Krishna is something different. So Vishnu's BBT describes this analogy. Vishnu Chakravarti Pad says that as a lamp does not seem to shine so brightly in sunlight as it does in the darkness. If you have a little kerosene lamp and go out in the midday sun, it doesn't really do anything. And you go out there at midnight on Amavasya and you can find your way home on the footpath with that little gas lantern. Just as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver platter, but it does on a plate of blue glass. This is the analogy that Vishwanath uses to compare the Boma Vrindavan Leela with the Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Vrindavan Leela is like a diamond set in silver. Doesn't have much contrast. It's beautiful and valuable and attractive and glittering and interesting. But when you take the diamond and set it in a blue sapphire ring or a dark blue background, that contrast of dark and cool and bright and fiery diamond is quite attractive and amazing and fulfilling and satisfying. Krishna's pastimes as Govinda don't seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha or Goloka as they do within the material realm of Maya. Which is not really Maya when he's here, but he's using that term. Sri Krishna descends to earth and acts toward his pure devotees like a devoted son. He interacts with his devotees as a boyfriend, as a husband, father, friend, and so on. And within the darkness of material existence, these brilliant liberated pastimes give unlimited ecstasy to the surrendered devotees of the Lord. So we, devotees of the Lord, who are living in this blue sapphire-like world, dark blue sapphire-like world, when Krishna appears in our dark world, it's like a brilliant diamond entering our life. The diamond of Krishna. Diamonds are charged. They're like Suryakant. They're charged with light. Very powerful. Large diamond actually emits light and facets of light in all directions. They're very brilliant. So Krishna's presence in our life is a great contrast, is a great source of value, wealth, attraction, glimmer, glitter, radiance, effulgence. He's that Ujjwala Anila Mani. He's like a diamond here, he's a hero. So we're in the dark, we're in this darkness of material existence. And when Krishna comes and shows his pastimes, that they're like a brilliant, brilliant, liberated light of his pastimes, thrills us with happiness and ecstasy. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he says in regard to this, verse 37. Because the verse says that, O my dear Master Krishna, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come here. Why do you come to the earth? And why do you imitate material life? You become a coward boy and you're someone's son and you seem to be working all day long, milking cows, running behind cows, pasturing the cows. You're working like an ordinary Vaishya, taking care of cows. Why do you do this? You do this just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Vishnu comments. Some think that the Purna Brahma, becoming the son of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan, cannot be real or absolute. It's simply illusion. Brahma Satya Jagan Mithya. And that the devotees who accept that the Para Brahman becomes a transcendental human being, if anyone believes that, they are an illusion. Replying to this, Brahma recites this verse, though you are always beyond the influence of material nature, you are ever situated within the material world. You assume forms and relationships similar to those found in the material world. He assumes a human form, and the world is full of human beings. And he assumes human relationships. He's not God, he's not the creator, and we're the created, he's not the controller, and we're the controlled. He's being controlled as someone's son. He's simply dependent, like any other child is dependent on his mother and father, dependent on his mother to eat, and father for protection, dependent on his elder brother. That's an ordinary relationship. But your relationships are not false and temporary as the Mayavadis accuse. They're not, your relationships as son and friend and lover are not false and temporary like those of material fathers and sons. Your forms and relationships are completely transcendental and eternally existing. Though your pastimes are eternal and transcendental, they appear similar to material activities. Why do you need to imitate material activities? You appear in a material world to further increase the bliss that your devotees taste from relishing your pastimes. Just as a lamp does not shine as brightly in the sunlight as it does in the shade, or as a diamond does not look as brilliant on a silver platter as it does on a plate of blue glass, Govinda's pastimes do not appear as astonishing in Vaikuntha as they do in the material world. Verse 37, Prabhupada's Krishna book. Sometimes good things are worth stealing. My dear Lord Krishna, those who deride you, claiming you have a material body like an ordinary man, are described in the Bhagavad Gita, Avajanati Mamudha, as demoniac and less intelligent. You are always transcendental. The non-devotees are cheated because they consider you to be a material creation. Actually, you have assumed this transcendental body, which resembles that of an ordinary coward boy of this material world. Why have you done this? You have assumed this beautiful coward boy form simply to increase the devotion and transcendental bliss of your devotees. So, verse 38. Chananta eva janantu kim bahuktya name prabhu manaso vapasho vacho vaibhavam tavagocharaha. Brahma said, my dear Lord, O Purushottam Sri Krishna, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. We meet a lot of those people in India. You try to preach them. No, what are you telling me? I know Krishna. I am knowing Krishna. I know Krishna better than you. You're some Westerner. I know Gita. I know Bhagavat. I am knowing Krishna very well. Some people say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. Say, I, Lord Brahma, as far as I am concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh, my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. And that's the mind of my four heads and the words from my four mouths. They're beyond that. No purport in the VBT, but Vishnu Chakravarti is telling. Here, Sri Krishna might say, after hearing this verse from Brahma, O Brahma, if what you say is all true, then please tell me how many wise philosophers are there like you who can so brilliantly explain everything about my transcendental form, my Braj devotees, my pastimes, and my devotional service. Fearing that Krishna might say this in reply to his previous statement, Brahma then speaks this verse with shame, fear, and repentance. Brahma says, I am of that category. I am the greatest fool. So shame, fear, and repentance. Vishnu Chakravarti is saying that he's speaking this verse with shame, fear, and repentance. Because he's saying, Brahma, to repeat the verse again, verse 38, he's saying, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. There are people, when he's saying there are people, it means me. There are people like me, Lord Brahma, your wayward son, who previously said, I know everything about Krishna. He's just some coward boy. What is this? Now I know differently. But let people like me think that way. But as far as I'm concerned now that I've learned my lesson, I really don't want to speak much about this matter. I can just say this. Your opulences, now that I have experience of them, your opulences are way beyond me. The Brahma is saying, I'm in the category, I'm a fool like these people, so I'm very shameful and fearful and repentingly saying this. Krishna protests, so this is a dialogue going back and forth. If that is so, Brahma, then why have you spoken all these words? Brahma replies, Kim Bahuktya. What is the use of all my words? Speaking too much in your presence is simply a sign of my foolishness. And bahu uktya. Uktya means uvacha. Ukt, words. And bahu means many. Krishna says, my dear Brahma, you are trying to cheat me with your words. And trick me. Brahma says, although I have meditated on them, my mind has no power to understand your opulences. My eyes cannot grasp your transcendental form, and my words cannot describe you. As I said previously in verse 7, Gunatmanas tepi gunan vimatum. Who can possibly count your unlimited transcendental qualities, my Lord? Another meaning of Brahma's statement is this, Chakravarti says. Brahma's telling, my Lord Krishna, I cannot grasp the powers of your mind with my senses. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? Sakshat teveva kim utatma sukana bhute. I cannot understand anything about your body or any of your words which are the Vedas. Indeed, when you are standing before me silently, I cannot even speak a word. In your presence, persons like me are totally insignificant. So remember, there are 40 shlokas in Brahma's prayers, and he's coming to the conclusion here. This is verse 38, and here he's speaking this verse. It's being told here he's speaking this verse with shame, fear, and repentance. So when it's all said and done, he said so much about tattva and philosophy and identifying Krishna. And when it's all said and done, he said he actually can't forget what he's done. And actually, Krishna, although I'm glorifying you with all these stutis and prayers for the last 37 verses, and your supreme over Vishnu and your Madhurya form of Purushottam, Madhurya Purushottam is so difficult to understand, but it's the supreme form Purushottam beyond Aishwarya Purushottam, beyond Mayara Purushottam. You are greater than myself, Brahma or Shiva or Vishnu. He's the origin of everything. But actually, when it gets all said and done, and your Vrijvasis are so wonderful, so glorious, you appear amongst them to enliven them and display your pastimes and reciprocate with their love with you, and they're so wonderful. But actually, I still feel really bad about what I did. I feel really ashamed and shameful. I'm so fearful and so repentant. I don't know what to do with myself. So now it takes the Prabhupada's purport for 38. Or rather, his translation. Srila Prabhupada says, Brahma said this in verse 38 in Krishna book. My dear Lord Sri Krishna, I have nothing to say about people who advertise that they have already realized God. I really like Prabhupada's way of saying things. In the BBT, the translation is, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. Jananta eva janantu. Prabhupada translates that phrase. Jananta eva janantu. He translates it. I have nothing to say about people who advertise that they have already realized God, or that by their realizations they themselves have become God. It's quite a little bit elaborated. As far as I am concerned, I admit frankly that for me, it is not possible to realize you by my body, mind, or speech. That's the verse in this Prabhupada's Tika. What can I say about you, my dear Lord? Or how can I realize you by my senses? I cannot even think of you perfectly with my mind, which is the master of the senses. Your qualities, your activities, and your body cannot be conceived by any person within this material world. Only by your mercy can one understand, to some extent, what you are. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Lord of all creation. Although I sometimes falsely think that I am the master of this universe, I may be master of this universe, but there are innumerable, unlimited billions of universes. And there are innumerable billions of Brahmas who also preside over these unlimited universes. But actually, you and you alone are the master of all of them. So So Brahma is really getting down on the humble scale here. Text 39. Anajanihi mam Krishna sarvam tvam vetsi sarvadrik tameva jagatam nato jagat etat tavarpitam. My dear Sri Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes. And yet I offer this one universe unto you. And then at BBT Purport, they quote Krishna book, which we'll read. Then they say, in this verse, the words sarvam tvam vetsi sarvadrik are significant. Krishna knows everything and sees everything, and therefore Brahma did not need to remain in Vrindavan to maintain his personal loving contact with the Lord. In fact, as the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma was somewhat out of place in the simple, blissful atmosphere of Vrindavan, where Krishna was exhibiting his supreme opulences in herding cows, enjoying picnics and playing games and so on. In other words, Brahma is praying, I'd really like to stay here with everybody else. And Krishna is saying, I don't think you'll fit. You really don't have the right kind of headgear. And you have to wear four turbans and four peacock feathers and have, four cow herding sticks. It's a little cumbersome to move around Vrindavan with four heads. Now we don't know whether you're coming or going. Which way you're going. Are you coming or going right or left or up or back? And all that opulence, I just don't think you're going to fit in with the coward boys. And what will you talk about at the dinner table? They're going to talk about the cows and calves, and you're going to talk about universal affairs and management of the universe. And they're going to talk about milk production and churning butter and ghee and my pastimes. And what will you talk about? You really be out of place here. Upon seeing the intense love the residents of Vrindavan had for Lord Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to remain there. I think I better go now. I disturbed you long enough. I've detained you long enough from your Brijvasis. They're just twiddling their fingers and waiting for me to finish my stutis and get the hell out of here, so they can get on with their picnic. I stopped the picnic right in midstream. Everybody's halfway eating their food, and I snatched them all. Took them away for a year, which is a moment of my time. Now they want to finish their lunch. And laughing and joking. The joke was half told, the laugh was half made, and the prasad was half eaten. So that embarrassing and shameful deed I did, dastardly deed, I want to kind of quickly exit stage right before everybody figures out what happened and starts throwing mud pies at me, and mud, let's say, dirt bombs. Upon seeing the intense love of the Brijvasis for Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to stay there. He was not eager, however, to give up Krishna's association, but he felt he better go back to Brahmaloka and do his personal bhakti there. Somewhat embarrassed and unhappy over his foolish attempt at bewildering Krishna, Brahma preferred to resume his transcendental loving service rather than try to enjoy the Lord's presence. He didn't have any qualification to enjoy the Lord's presence. In this regard, Vishnu Chakravarti says, Sri Krishna replied, "Very well, Brahma. Perhaps you do not know the full extent of my power and opulence. Still, I do not know the full extent of your power and opulence either." Embarrassed, distraught, and incapable of answering any more, Brahma speaks this verse, "O my Lord Sri Krishna, please give me permission to leave." It says, anujanihi. Anujanihi, this is a Sanskrit word. It's this tradition. It says, please give leave. Anujanihi. Anujanihi. Please give me permission to leave. This is the tradition here that when you're meeting with someone, may I take your leave? We discussed this before. Even Brahma 5,000 years ago, this tradition was there.
I am not worthy to stay here even for a moment, my dear Lord Krishna. As I am most fallen, I should go to a suitably fallen place like Brahmaloka. My dear Krishna, here the word Krishna means, O Lord, please attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan.
Beautiful illumination by Vishnu Chakravarti Pad. Anujanihi mam Krishna. Because in a previous verse he said, Mukunda, give me liberation, give me your sweet smile, let me have some dust of the resonance. So sometimes he says Mukunda, or says Ghosh, what is he talks about the Vrishvasi, he says the Ghoshvasis. What do you say? The Ghoshnivasis, Ghoshnivasinim, those who live in the Ghosh and vibrate all those wonderful sounds and surround themselves with all those sounds of cows and flutes and mooing and lowing of cows. Anujanihi mam Krishna. We sing, O Krishna. Well, the verse is translated, O Krishna, but Vishnu is saying, why use the word Krishna? Because Krishna means sankarshan, karshati, attraction. Krishna means Krishna Anand. Bliss, attract me, fill me with bliss. He's saying, Krishna, Anujani. He says, very interesting verse when you see the play of the words. On one word he says, Anujanihi, Anujani, please let me go. Then he says, Mam Krishna, please let me stay. And the first word he's saying, please, I beg your permission to leave here because I don't have the adhikar and I don't really fit in and everyone's going to laugh at my foreheads and I have this long gray beard and everybody has beautiful curly black hair and I look kind of silly with my foreheads and cows will look at me strange and maybe get scared and I won't give much milk and they'll run away. Think of some other demon coming from Kamsa or something. Some strange creature because the cows have only seen one-headed human beings, not four. They're seeing some Rakshasa in disguise like Agasura, Bakasura, Putana. And they've seen, the cows have also seen all these crazy demons also. And even entered in the mouth of the Agasura, the cows. And he says, Krishna, he says, please give me your permission. Please, oh Krishna, please, I beg your permission. May I take your leave and go to Brahmaloka? And he says, oh, and can I stay also? So he's saying, please let me go, but bless me in such a way, give me a rain check. Like we have this phrase, give me a rain check. Please give me a rain check that I can come back real soon. And then he said, this place, Vrindavan, which is in the middle planetary system, it's situated what appears to be in the middle planetary system. And there are seven planets above and seven below, the 14 planetary systems. And Earth is in the middle, the Karmasthan. And Brahma's at the top of the seven planetary systems, Janalok, Mahalok, Tapalok, Satilok, Brahmalok. He's at the topmost planet. Everywhere in the universe, everywhere in the description of the universe, it says topmost planet, Satilok, Brahmaloka. And he's saying here, and Vishnath is explaining here, saying, please give me your permission to go to a suitably fallen place. Fallen means below the earth. It means the hellish planets, Atala, Rasatala, Talatala, Patala, the seven planets below the earth. They're fallen or lower, much lower than higher planets. They're called the lower planets, lower planetary region. But he's thinking that compared to Vrindavan, compared to Braja Gokul and Boma Vrindavan, my abode, my pad over there in Uptown New York, Central Park West, is really a fallen place compared to Second Avenue and down the village where Srila Prabhupada is dancing and chanting with all his devotees, which was called the Lower East Side. The West Side is where all the rich people live. Uptown, it's called Uptown, West Side, Central Park West. And Prabhupada was staying in the Lower East Side. Opposite of West is East. And he was staying the Lower East Side with the derelicts and the bums and drug addicts. And that's where he was staying. But that was the highest place because that's where Gauranga was dancing. That's where Lord Nityananda was dancing with their pure devotee Srila Prabhupada ki. Wherever the pure devotee chants in Sankirtan, Gauranga comes there and dances. And he spins in circles around Nityananda. And Nityananda tries to catch his feet. And Prabhupada could see that. And when Prabhupada was in London, in Bury Place, and chanting Shudanam Sankirtan, and he said one day, oh, please, President of the Temple, provide two asans. Make two small asans for the temple. Because Narada Muni is coming to the Kirtan, and Lord Brahma is coming to the Kirtan. Do you see them? Prabhupada, gee, I didn't see. I haven't seen yet. Yeah, okay.
So then they made little asans. They had on the altar one empty asans, one for Brahma and one for Narada Muni. This is in Leelamrita.
And 69 or 70, whenever, Bury Place Temple in London, Soho or something like that.
So this situation, he says, I have to go back to that fallen place like Brahma Loka. Then he says, Krishna, which means, oh Krishna, please Karshati, Karshan, attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan. All right, I have to live in Auckland. I have to live in Ukraine, or whatever. What's the city in Ukraine? Kiev? I have to live in Kiev. And that's a fallen place. I have to live in Brahmaloka. But people think, oh, and I'm leaving India. I'm going to a first world country, New Zealand, Australia, nice honey, everything good. Kiwi fruit, this, that, koala bears. All kinds of clean streets and well-behaved people and this and that. And electricity and all those funny things that people have out there. Like electricity, the common facilities. But then, actually, it's a very fallen place, this New Zealand loka or Ukraine loka, Brahma loka. But since I'm stuck in this fallen, faraway place from this exalted, opulent, beautiful, sweet place of Vrindavan, oh Krishna, your Karshan, Krishna, can you please attract me? Although I'm stuck over there, way far away, in Satyaloka, Brahma loka, at the top of the seven planetary regions. There's seven planets above, Janalok, Marutak, Tapalok. And then, Om Bhur Bhuvasva, Janalok, Marutak, Tapalok, Satyalok. This is seven planets. Bhur Bhuvalok, Bhurloka, Bhuvaloka, Satyalok, like this. Om Bhur Bhuvasva. Bhurloka, Bhuvaloka, Swargaloka, Janaloka, Mahaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka. Seven planets. I'm at the top, but it's really the bottom, because it's so far away. So, but you have the power, you're Krishna. You have limited gravitational power of love and magnetic pull of your sweet mercy, anugraha. So please, O Krishna, I'm begging you, I have no place here, no service here, no real contribution here in Vrindavan with all these beautiful, sweet, surrendered Brijvasis. And I have my service there to maintain the universe and sit in the seat of the Prime Minister of the universe. So let me go back to that Shantaras Seva, Shanta or Dasya that I have, and leave all these Madhurya Maya Bhaktas and Vatsalya Maya Bhaktas a brudge to you and your intimate sweet pastimes, which you came here to show to all of them and not to me. I came here simply to disrupt your pastimes and take you away from them, which is a great offense. I'm ashamed about it. I feel very fearful and bad. So I'm begging you to leave. But still, can you be merciful to me? Because you're Krishna and you can do anything. Gatana Agatana Patiyasi Shakti. You can make the possible impossible and the impossible possible. So please, Krishna, please, I beg you, please attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan. My body is a useless nuisance here. Useless nuisance. My body has no use over here. Okay, my body is there in New Zealand. My body is in Ukraine. But I want my mind in Vrindavan. Mora Mana Vrindavan. Mora Mana Vrindavan. Wherever Lord Chaitanya was in India or anywhere, dancing, preaching, singing, speaking. His mind was always in Vrindavan. So the same point is being made here by Brahma. He's saying, okay, body's here, body's there. It's irrelevant. Because of our Prabhu Datta Desh, our Guru has given us service outside of Rajadam or Goloka, Bhoma Vrindavan. But still, we pray, oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Oh, Radharani, oh, Swarup Shakti, oh, Bhakti Shakti, Ladini Shakti, Prem Shakti. Oh, Krishna, you're always dancing together in Vrindavan. Please, will you attract my mind? I don't care, my body can be anywhere. Let it go to hell. Doesn't matter. That's my bad fortune. But please bless me, Krishna, Hare Krishna, that my mind and heart will always be in Vrindavan. Your sweet form, qualities, pastimes will always be racing through my mind and dancing there. And this way I'll never lose connection with you and always stay in remembrance of you wherever I may be placed. Whether I be placed in Patala or Atala or even in Brahmaloka. Brahma continued his prayer. This is verse 39. I have prayed that you make me a blade of grass in Gokul. This is verse 34. Yet you have not responded, even so much by a glance. That's what we're saying.
generally these prayers are going on. We see in the Bhagavatam 40 continuous prayers, one after another. And he's asked, sometimes he's glorifying Krishna, he's glorifying the Vrijabhasis, and then he makes a petition. He asks for a boon and benediction. He said, please, can I be a blade of grass and go cool? Krishna's quiet. No response. Not yes, not no. So now Vishnu is saying, listen, I asked in verse 34, five verses previous to this, 39, that I want, please, bless me that I become a blade, take birth as a blade of grass in Gokul. But you didn't respond. You didn't even glance at me. Therefore, what more shall I do standing here? Imagine you're talking to someone for 40 shlokas. And you say, listen, think I can stay somewhere, you have 5,000 acres here. Think I can be a blade of grass back there somewhere in the back corner of your 5,000 acres? The person doesn't even look at you. Well, I guess you're not listening to me, huh? The person looking the other way, looking at Subal, looking at Madhumangal. Well, I guess I'm not getting too far over here. I guess I'll go now. I'll take your leave. Thanks a lot. Bye. It's like some guy's trying to pick up a girl or something like that. She's looking the other way. Krishna's totally inattentive and not really much attentive to his petition. Okay, I guess I better quickly go away, for I have become an offender by interrupting your lunch pastimes on the bank of the Yamuna. Therefore, I could not taste the nectar of even one word from your lips. Before Brahma showed up on the scene, Krishna was laughing and joking and speaking 1,000 words a minute. Hey, Batu, hey, Sridhar, Subal, this, that. Hey, did you hear this? Look at that monkey upside down. They're just laughing and joking. You see when people eat, especially Indians, that when they're having food together, speaking like wild. Blah, 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 blah. It's just like when they start eating and that ghee starts rolling and the sweets start melting in their mouth, their minds get loose, their tongues get loose. You see five or eight Indians traveling on a train eating together, and after about 10 minutes of eating, they're just laughing and carrying on for hours until they finally slow down to tamaguna and fall asleep. So you imagine these raucous, wild, coward boys. There's no etiquette or rules. There's no one out there in the forest. They don't have to act or perform for their mother and father. They're completely uncontrolled and free, and they're just laughing. All of a sudden, Brahma shows up. Oh! My room is quiet. There's one story in this regard that Sridhar Swami told. He said once in the Mat in Calcutta, in Bhagwazar Mat, the main Mat, the showcase of Gaudiya Math, Bhakti Santa Saraswati's time, a few of the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they had just had some prasad, some feast or something. They're sitting together. They're kind of laughing and enjoying it. They're just telling jokes or whatever, I don't know, just speaking about Krishna, but they were just enjoying Krishna conscious laughter, relishing some of the pastimes of the Lord or some funny things that devotees had done or whatever. Pure fun and happy laughter. And they were laughing like devotees too. Just, ha ha, it's like devotees are blissful, detached, pure, so they laugh. Special kind of laughing. And then suddenly someone noticed outside the room, peering through the doorway, was some strange man, like kind of like a gentleman, a Bengali gentleman from Calcutta City. He was well-dressed and looked like a highly educated person, very cultured. He was looking with great consternation, great concentration and interest in these sannyasis and brahmacharis who were carrying on together after this feast for the Mahaprasad. And then Sridhar Maharaj noticed that he was looking, and he turned to the other, and he said, shh, what? Hey, cool down, behave yourself. Some outside person looking, he may think that, what are these, he may have bad thoughts about us or about our Guru Maharaj. He may think, what are these sannyasis and brahmacharis doing? They go out all day and they beg alms and food and money from all the businessmen and cultured people in Calcutta. Then they come back to the Math and they make a big feast and have a kirtan, just laugh and laugh and roll around the floor. It won't look very good. Everyone became really quiet. Yes, yes. Well, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, man mana bhava mad bhakto. Yes, yes. In Bhagavatam, Krishna says, janmad yas yataha. They started getting very sober and on their best behavior, minding their P's and Q's, as they say. And then the man ventured into the room. From his outside in the hallway, peering in or observing from a distance, he came closer. Then Sridhar Maharaj, who was a senior sannyasi and devotee there at that in that meeting or that group of devotees. He greeted him very cordially and friendly and maturely. He said, "Welcome, sir, to our mat. Please forgive us. We were carrying on a little bit, maybe." And the man said, no, I was really amazed, actually. I'm a man of this world. I'm 70 years old. I'm a professor. I've seen many people. I've had many social engagements. And sometimes people laugh, and there's some, but I've never seen such pure laughter. I've never seen such pure laughter as I've seen today with your group of sannyasis and brahmacharis. The kind of, the way you're laughing, and obviously you're talking about your Ishtadev Krishna and Balaram and Radharani, whatever, Gaur-lila, relishing Gaur-lila, but your laughter, your expressions and your laughter and the whole ambience and energy that you're emitting was so attractive to me that I never witnessed or never thought anything like this could go on in the material world. Because all the laughter, no laughter is like this. It's always people laugh at the expense of someone else's feelings, or they mock someone, or... But this is really, I'm seeing pure laughter here. It was such an amazing experience. I don't take any offense. I was just rather amazed. I'd never witnessed such a transcendental experience of actual spiritual laughter that you're all relishing. And I wish that someday I could become qualified also to relish that pure laughter that you're all relishing with each other in relation to your Krishna. Well, Brahma, that's what's happening here. He's saying that I better go because I've been speaking all these prayers, and I interrupted your lunch pastimes on the bank of the Yamuna. You were relishing so much and laughing. And now, as soon as I came on the scene, you all became quiet because I kidnapped all your friends. There was no one to talk to. You're left by yourself. Krishna's laughing and joking. He's the center of the party. He was the center of the party. Everywhere there were hundreds and hundreds of japa circles. Like they have these japa circles in Chopati Beach, all these circles of devotees chant japa. So there was hundreds and hundreds of bhojantali circles. Krishna was in the center, and he was surrounded on all sides by coward boys, all looking at him face to face, eye to eye, plate to plate, mouth to mouth, hand to hand. And there were thousands and thousands, but everyone thought that Krishna was in the center of their circle, center of their attention, reciprocating with them and receiving food from their hand and taking food from his hand and eating food from their mouth, and they were eating food from his mouth. None of the coward boys thought they were on the outer circle, or none of them thought they were distant. Everyone thought he was in the inside. Hey, I'm in the inside. I'm the in crowd. I'm in the inner circle. Krishna's with me. In fact, Yogamaya arranged that they thought Krishna's eating with me alone and no one else. Just like in the Rasa dance, there's thousands of gopis, and each gopi looked around. She didn't see any other gopis. Oh, Krishna's gone off with me and is only dancing in a circle with me. Oh, I'm very special. So this is Yogamaya's arrangement to fulfill and satisfy the inner aspiration of every devotee to be special and unique and one and alone and with Krishna. So the cowboy's like that. And Brahma's saying, oh, I become a first-class offender by interrupting your lunch pastimes. And I, because of that, I could not taste the nectar of even one word from your lips. I solo your boyfriend, so I didn't hear any words from them. I couldn't witness any spiritual laughter like this man in Calcutta who stood in the hallway and witnessed these sannyasis and brahmacharis engaging in their spiritual laughing and hasiras. I couldn't experience one word of that joking conversation in Sakiras. And here I'm standing before you in Shantaras and Dasiras, offering 40 prayers, and you haven't spoken one word to me either. Although Vishnu sometimes interjects some dialogue to open up the scene. But in the actual Bhagavatam, chapter 14, Ramastuti, there is no reply by Krishna. There's no response. So you haven't spoken a word. Therefore, I will quickly depart and go far away. Now please reclaim your calves and finish your pastimes with your dear friends, joking and laughing with them on the riverbank. Why should I recklessly repeat my request again and again? With this intention, Brahma says in this verse, indeed, you know everything about my mind, body, and senses. Just because I created this universe, does not mean that I am its master. You are the master, not only of this one universe, but of all the universes, Jagatam Nato. And that phrase is there. the third line of verse 39, which we're discussing. Tvam eva jagatam nato. He's Natri, Sri Natri, the Lord, Jagannath, of all the universes. Therefore, I now offer to you, my dear Lord Krishna, this very small universe, which is actually your property to begin with. Please do with this universe whatever you wish. So that's Brahma's, that's Vishnu's commentary, phrasing what Brahma said. And Srila Prabhupada says, as a super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you will kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. Prabhupada makes it very clear. Listen, I disturb you, were having a really good time till I came on the scene. And demons also disturb your good times, and then you kill them. So I disturb your good times, but you didn't kill me, that's your mercy. Agasura, Bakasura, Putana, they all disturb your good times with your mother, with your friends. And you dispatch them, you kill them and send them to death, and continue with your blissful pastimes. Well, I'm like a demon, I've come and interrupted your pastimes also. Stopped you in the middle of your lunch, stole your calves, you're searching where are they, you got so much distress about your calves. But you're so kind to me, you didn't kill me. So let me go back, because I'm a devotee, you spared me. So now I'm sorry for disturbing your pastimes, really sorry about that. Now if you kindly allow me, I'll get out of here as fast as possible. Now you can enjoy your pastimes without my presence. So then this is the last verse, is verse 40. This is the last verse of the prayers of Lord Brahma. Sri Krishna Vishnikula Pushkara Joshadayin Shama Nirjara Dvija Pashudadi Pradikarin Udharma Sarvarahara Shiti Rakshasa Drug Akalpa Markam Aharan Bhagavan Namaste. Brahma said, my dear Sri Krishna Purushottam, Sri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vrishni dynasty and expand the great oceans consisting of the earth, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists, and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. Well, this is, he's going back to his, crawling back to his Shantaras, simply offering obeisances and doing his service at a distance. Purport, BBT. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, Lord Brahma is here engaged in the ecstasy of Nam Sankirtan, glorifying various holy names of Lord Krishna that indicate his variegated pastimes. So he's saying, Sri Krishna, Vrishnikula Pushkara, Joshadayin, Shama Nirjara Dvija, Pashudadi Vridikarin. So all these different phrases, Shiti Raksha, Rakshash Drug. He's the opponent, he will oppose the Rakshasas, Rakshas Drug. Krishna expertly suppressed the demoniac population of the earth, which became unbearable with the advent of demoniac politicians like Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupal. Similarly, in modern society, there are so many so-called God-fearing people who are actually attracted to demoniac existence. Such persons become enlivened with the setting of the sun and go out into the darkness to enjoy life in restaurants, nightclubs, discotheques, hotels, and so on, which are all simply meant for illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat-eating. Then there are those who openly defy God and His laws, declaring themselves atheists and demons, both the covert and overt enemies of the Lord, constitute an unholy burden for the earth. And Lord Krishna descends to expertly remove this burden. Here, Lord Brahma indirectly states that Lord Krishna should remove Brahma's own subtle atheism, which had led him to try to exert illusory power over Lord Krishna. Vishnu Chakravarti says Lord Brahma, in his shame, felt himself like a Brahma Rakshas from Satyaloka, who had come to earth to disturb Lord Krishna and his intimate friends and calves. Brahma is lamenting that although Lord Krishna is most exalted, the Lord of all lords, because he had appeared before Brahma in such a simple and innocent feature, decorated with a stick, a conch shell ornaments, red clay, peacock feather, and so on, sporting with his coward friends, Brahma dared to challenge Krishna. Vishnu states, "May these prayers of Brahma," which conclude with verse 40, "take away all doubts and broadcast all the definitive conclusions of devotional service, become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness." So this is how much importance the famous commentator Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura gives to 10th canto, chapter 14, Brahma Stuti. He says that these are the essence of Bhakti Siddhanta, Sambandha, Krishna Sambandha, Krishna Videya, Krishna Prayojan. They take away all doubts. Brahma Stuti removes all doubts. And they establish the definitive conclusions in Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Tattva Siddhanta. And he's saying, these prayers are so wonderful, I want them, they are like an expert craftsman. And I want them to craft my consciousness, expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness. In other words, he's saying, I'm praying to Brahma, the head of the Sampradaya, and to his prayers, that he and his prayers that he's given here become the foundation of my consciousness. Our devotional or spiritual consciousness should be founded on the strong foundation of philosophy, Sambandha, Videya, and Prayojana. And in the words of Vishnu Chakravarti, there's no stronger foundation one can attain than by studying these prayers and receiving the mercy of Lord Brahma. I think we'll continue there tomorrow with the Sartadarshini's elaboration on Brahma's prayer number 40 and also Prabhupada's commentary also. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai.